with the Seven Generations radio show. And I'm very happy to have with me today Ellen Smith and Graham Smith White of Sustainable Shepherd. Thank you both for coming in here. And this is a topic I'm very interested in, as I know you are. And I would like to first mention that I'm honored to be holding the time slot and date of Ellen's late husband, Bill, who was in this studio and had his show here. And thank you very much. I'm very honored and honored to have you all in here today. Let me give you some sound. I forgot.
Okay.
That helps. Go ahead. And what I'd like to do is just ask you to start off and tell us a little bit about Sustainable Shepherd and why you're involved in it.
Okay, I guess I'll start. Sustainable Shepherdstown. Why I'm involved with it is because this has been a passion of mine. I've had two passions all my life, and one has been art, and the other has been something that at the time was not really called sustainability. People didn't even use that word. It was just this idea of being able to meet all of my needs on this one piece of land. We built a passive solar house. This goes back to the early 80s, and this idea of growing our own food, and I didn't know terms. It's just always been an interest of mine. Sustainable Shepherdstown kind of came out of a couple of different people's, I guess, getting the urge to do this at the same time. Ruth Robertus, she read the Transition Handbook. She shared it with me. I went to something called Transition Training that was put on by a group in Berkeley Springs. And when I was there, I met Paul Woods and actually Lori Schottler, who was early in this group as well. And then we decided to try the idea of loosely following the transition handbook or the transition idea, and a few other people joined us, a few other people dropped out, and we just kept meeting and coming up with ideas, and here we are.
All right. And Graham, how about from your perspective, how did you get involved and why did you get involved?
Okay, so I'm sort of a part-time resident of the area, on and off resident of the area, I guess. I'm a musician by trade, and I split my time between here on the East Coast and Portland, Oregon on the West Coast. And I lived here previously about 7 or 8 years ago, and there was not much of like an organized sort of sustainability environmental movement that I could tell. And moved to Portland, and there clearly is. It's a very vibrant, integral part of the community there. And really got into the permaculture scene and the sort of core group that's there. And continually when I would meet people, go to workshops, that sort of stuff, I would ask, is there anything like this in Appalachia, in West Virginia or North Carolina, that area? And repeatedly the answer was no, but there should be. And so I made the decision to kind of move my operation back here about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, and to put some solid work into building an audience in this part of the country, and was really glad to see that there was Sustainable Shepherdstown at the time. I don't remember how I came across it, actually. I think it was part of the ACFF is how I came.
Made
aware of it.
And that is what?
The American Conservation Film Festival.
Okay.
And everything I do with my music, I try to be as sustainable as possible. All my recordings are solar-powered, and use as little carbon as possible. I ride my bike a lot of places for performances and shows and recordings. And so energy is a big, big part of what I'm about, and solar power specifically. And decided to get involved with Sustainable Shepherdstown when they started having meetings last fall. I was actually picking up trash on the Potomac with the Shepherd University Environmental Group. And that after we were done, there was a Sustainable Shepherd's Time meeting, and I said, sure, I'll go. So that's when I got involved and ended up chairing the energy group because somebody needs to do that.
Yep.
And you have lots of energy, right?
Yeah.
How did you go about setting priorities? How did you figure out where to start? And what do you see as your current priorities? And
setting priorities, we start a mission statement. And our vision statement is a resilient and healthy community working together for sustainability. And our mission statement is how we're planning to accomplish that. And we're planning to foster a vibrant local economy, promote environmental awareness, reduce our dependence on fossil fuels, and serve as a model of positive community growth by starting and nurturing new local community enterprises, by connecting people in the community with many great ideas that are already in circulation, by leading efforts to change behavior in local institutions, and by serving as a living example of sustainable living to inspire our neighbors to make themselves and their communities more sustainable.
Okay. Yeah, it's a lot. It's any of that in there. I didn't hear it, but it's kind of, I just kind of, that one's been hitting me over the head. He has made an announcement that he wants to cut carbon emissions from power plants, and that they're going to be serious about it. Now, I kind of also looking at the legacy that he's going to leave, and that's the note that I think he struck was about the future and future generations who are dependent on what we do, and it's like, okay, you know, so this is what you guys are doing. So I'm interested. And Graham, do you want to talk a little bit about the energy side and what's going on with that?
Yeah, so there's a lot going on, actually, with the energy side. We, some of the energy group's been active since, I think, the beginning. I haven't personally been, but there's been a group.
There's always been one, yeah.
Yeah, there's always been an energy group. And one of the things they've done is getting water heater. Sort of blankets around people's water heaters, so they are using less energy to heat their water. As well as recently, we've been supportive of the Shepherdstown Presbyterian Church, which is a really interesting, unique model for community funding of solar, where there is a company out of, this is actually all put together by a local group called Solar Holler. And this is kind of their core. This is what they do. And there's a company in Frederick that makes a device that you can install on water heaters or really any appliance and connect it to the internet. And then at peak energy usage times, they'll turn off that device so it's not using energy to reduce the load on the grid, which is actually where a lot of the dirtiest energy comes from, because in those times there's diesel generators that kick on and are the least efficient and the most carbon intensive energy sources that we have.
What happens if you're taking a shower when it the guy that follows me or the
well, it just shifts the energy use is what it is.
Yeah. Well, it seems like getting the solar thing going for you anyway, you know, as far as running some piping across your roof and so
on. Oh, yeah, well, that's but it's a completely different concept.
Right.
This is electricity,
right.
And that's thermal heat.
Right.
And so this company in Frederick will pay people $100 a year to be able to do that, for access to install this device on your water heaters. And then through the program with Solar Holler, they then donate that $100 to, in this case, the Shepherdstown Presbyterian Church, and with enough support from the community, they're able to then take that money, and that's a payment on a loan for a solar installation, in addition to what they would already be paying as part of their budget for electricity, as well as savings that go into place with energy efficiency measures.
Where are they on that as far as the starting to install solar paneling? Is that underway already?
So where they are right now is the they have a contract to install the paneling. I don't think they've actually started installation. They have started installing the devices on the water heaters, and I think are probably about halfway through with that right now.
I had mine installed.
You did?
Yeah.
And how's it working for you?
Works fine. Don't even notice it.
Great. And what if you had a bunch of guests over? Can you override it or not?
Oh, I don't think we can do anything to it.
Yeah.
But it's okay. It's only for a short amount of time. And I mean, yeah,
well, that sounds great. I think I'll try that myself. Well, I don't know. Do they go out to the outer? I mean, is this thing?
Theoretically, no. There's no geographical limits. The really only limit is an electric hot water heater and a high-speed internet connection. And it can, I think with the Shepherdstown Presbyterian Church, they're kind of, that's kind of done and said. But there are definitely other opportunities. I know that, for instance, in Fayette County, Lewisburg Town Hall has also been done this way. The Harpers Ferry Library is going to have a similar thing, as well as there's very early stages of the Hedgesville Library is going to have a similar situation.
Where does the $100 come from? Who pays?
So the $100 comes from this company that makes...
Mosaic.
Mosaic is the name of the company that makes and manufactures and controls this device, then sells on the energy market to energy companies the ability to reduce their load. It's actually cheaper for them to pay you to turn your hot water heater off than it is to pay for the electricity you would use from the diesel generators.
So the power company ultimately is paying you to save some energy at peak times, is that right?
For Mosaic's ability to reduce their demand.
Right.
And Mosaic is paying us, paying the money that's going to the nonprofit.
Right. So I'm just thinking in terms of people who are outside of a certain power grid, do you have to then work with that new power company to get them to buy into it?
You don't. You don't.
But Mosaic does that.
Mosaic does that. And I don't know anything about how they handle that.
Right. To answer your geographic question, Mosaic usually does this on things like hotels where they'll have a lot of hot water heaters in one spot. So with Harpers Ferry, I think they're trying to stay within a geographic area just, you know, to make it a little bit easier for Mosaic to do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, now how about now that that is underway, and I'm sure there's a lot of promotional work that goes with that, right?
Yeah.
Do you continue to try to get new people to sign on to this thing, and you can count these dollars up? Do you know how much money has moved to the church for church project?
This specifically, I don't know exactly. I think they have 120 hot water heaters that are dedicated to this. So
nice.
That's $12,000 a year, I think.
Yeah. Excellent.
And which I believe the installation they were looking to put on was something like $60,000 or $70,000 total. So they'll be able to pay that off in 5 to 6 years.
So anybody that wants one of these should just get in touch with Solar Holler.
Is that, yes, that what that's the best connection right there.
They're a local organization. That's cool. What area?
This is a very, very recent and really amazing, actually. So because of the continued work that Sustainable Shepherdstown and other people in Jefferson County have been doing on energy work, Jefferson County, along with Harrison County, has been selected by the state DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, to be recipients of a program called E3, which stands for Energy, Environment, and Economy. And what that is a federal program where the state handles the funds and uses them to support energy efficiency assessments and the technical and sort of expertise that goes into determining things that buildings could do to be more energy efficient at county, sort of municipal level, as well as commercial, manufacturing, industrial level. And so we're just getting started with that. We had a call about it 2 days ago, 3 days ago. And we've identified a couple buildings that are things that we would like to see worked on in the county. So one of them in Shepherdstown, one of them in Harpers Ferry, and we're looking for another municipal building that we would like to see be more efficient, as well as manufacturing, commercial, large-scale industrial buildings. And we're actually going to have a meeting on June 11th to discuss that further and receive input about potential new buildings to add to that at 7 p.m., I believe is when it is, at Mellow Moods.
Mellow Moods. What was that? What date is that? June what?
June 11th.
June 11th, 7 p.m., okay. That's great. What about, is there such a thing as an inventory of solar panel installation in this area in Shepherdstown? And is there a lot of that going on?
There's, in Shepherdstown itself, not so much. There's a kind of small informal solar district in town where a couple people have solar panels on their homes. And as far as like a formal inventory that can be referenced and looked at, I don't believe there is. Mm-hmm. It's more community knowledge, I would say.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that always occurs to me, and I'm guilty of, is lawn mowing. It bugs me. I keep thinking, okay, I got to get some ground cover here, you know, and quit this. It's either sheep or ground cover. But to keep mowing the yard, you know, especially if you got a big yard.
Maybe leave a little bit of area for the dogs to play on. That really ties into the notion of permaculture, mm-hmm. and thinking of a different way of looking at the land, and looking at the land as permanent agriculture. Something where the landscaping wouldn't really be landscaping, it would be more like something used to feed us, mm-hmm. year-round. Mm-hmm. And at Ruthen's bookstore on Thursday night, Ruth and Mike Robertus are having Michael Judd, who wrote Edible Landscaping with a Permaculture Twist. So there is something that you can do with your lawn, turn it into something that grows food instead of mowing it.
I'd like to add to that, there's another good book called Grow Food, Not Lawns, which is a really awesome book. A friend of mine in Portland wrote, Heather Jo Flores is her name.
Well, I grew up in the grass cutting industry. My dad you know, cutting grass. Let's see, I got a call coming in. Let me get all my buttons in the right place. Well, here.
It's a banner day.
Hello, who's calling here?
Yeah, we got the hound dog on the line.
Hey!
Hey, hound dog, how's it going out there?
I like that idea of planting corn and beans.
I think the deer would love it too, wouldn't they?
Well, we
need the weed whacker.
I agree. Yeah. It's either that or get some sheep, huh?
Well.
Or dogs.
Well, dogs don't eat grass.
No.
All right. Well.
Hey, Joe, I put a timer on my hot water.
$10 a month. That's a good one.
That's what it saved me.
Wow. Yeah.
$10 a month, huh?
It makes a lot of sense.
So that's $120 a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do the math.
Okay. I just did.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, they do a lot of good things out there where the hound dog hangs out.
Yep.
Well, we didn't have anything. You could just do whatever you wanted. And then people started saying, well, don't throw your trash out the window of the car. That was about the first thing I ever heard about the environment. And then my dad read Rachel Carson's mm-hmm. book, and he said, hey, that's a good book. You should read that. But I think we always had a natural bent toward these things. But, and there were ways, and I grew up in Florida where supposedly, you know, it's terribly hot, but I don't think it's really any worse there, and you do get a lot of breezes. And if you build your house right, you don't really have to have air conditioning. Matter of fact, where I live right now, I maybe use it 2 or 3 days out of the year when it gets terribly hot, and I hope that doesn't change and wind up with hot, hot, hot all the time, and people trying to keep up with it by, you know, getting cool, cool, cool all the time, you know. So, you know, it's like we're heading for worse trouble with that situation.
Well, it reminds me of all the infrastructure that's here, all these houses that are not well built, that are not energy efficient, that are going to need to be retrofitted or deep energy retrofitted. I mean, the best thing to do is to try to find ways to use less energy to begin with.
Well, alternate, and I guess what I was getting at with the way I grew up in the Florida houses, they used to have, you know, front porches and open, you know, a lot of circulation. I suppose there were things you could do with the ceiling to cut down. And the ways to build your house so that you don't have to burn a lot of stuff. You know, you don't have to cool it a whole lot in the summer. You don't have to. And I'm very curious about what your thoughts are on, let's leave it with that, about construction design that is amenable to energy reduction, both in the efficiency sense, but also in the sense of, well, we don't need it, especially in the summer. If you build a house in a certain way, shade, you know, and there should be shade trees in the parking lots. This is something I never can get a grip on.
You know, I just learned a concept that I really had no idea about, but with all these arid lands, there's a permaculture method for replanting arid lands and ultimately ending up with trees. And why do you want to end up with trees? Because trees actually make it rain. I mean, the way to fix a desert is to grow trees on it. I just didn't get that before. So we need to have as many trees planted as possible.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard the same thing about grasslands with grazing animals, that actually creates a CO2 sink. Mm-hmm. And whereas if you leave it as it is, it creates a worse problem because of the evaporation, I guess, particularly.
There are all kinds of permaculture videos online that will show you this. There's a guy named Jeff Lawton, Lawton, an Australian. So if you search for him and watch his videos, he's got quite a few good ones. And he's the one who shows in time capture, you know, over the years, how he's brought back arid lands with permaculture and put trees onto it. And he also does the animal thing. He's got videos of that. In terms of structural house design, Europe really is way ahead of us, and there's a lot of things built called a passive house, PASSIVHAUS. It's not a passive solar house, but it's actually a house that's got walls that are about 12 inches thick. It's really sealed off, so there's very little airflow. And then, of course, you've got to bring in a controlled method of bringing in the air. But these passive houses, they can supposedly be heated with something as little as a hairdryer. So they're building these in Europe.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
I actually, okay. So I've lived in Australia myself, actually, and there, it's kind of interesting just how automatic some of these concepts are, because it's a sort of do or die necessity. And there, I actually took a, I learned most of what I know about solar through a workshop at a business there that they sell solar panels and all the windmills and all the sort of stuff that goes with that. And in the middle of the summer in Australia, and there was no air conditioning in this building at all, none whatsoever. And it was a little chilly actually, mm-hmm. because of the way it's built, and it's a sort of intentional, much more forethought is put into it. And it's a little, these buildings are a little bit more expensive to put up in the first place, but end up over the whole lifetime of using them costing way less money. And that's, I think, in at least in this country, that's where the shortfall happens, is people look at the initial cost and go, well, that's just too expensive, and don't look at the continued cost and thinking about that. And in some ways, I can kind of understand that they might not have that much money in the first place, but are able to then, you know, squeak by with those more expensive annual costs to operate a house or a business or whatever. But it's just not, it's not the sustaining way to do that. You're going to eventually run out of whatever it is that you need to keep pumping into it, whether it's energy or money or whatever.
Both.
Yeah, both. Kind of the same thing, really.
Well, attic fans are, you know, kind of a antidote to the need for air conditioners sometimes. If you have a well-ventilated house, you have an attic fan that pushes the hottest air out of the attic, and people don't have them anymore because, you know, we're so reliant on air conditioning and a sealed-up house, which is the alternative that we seem to have adopted. But my house is actually a banked house. It's, you know, so half of the house, or a large part of the house, is below grade, so it's kind of a moderated temperature within that zone. And then the front part of the house is all windows, so, and it has a long eave, so that in the winter, when the sun is low, it comes in through all those windows and it heats up the tiles on the floor. And then in the summer, with the long eaves, you have a higher sun and it doesn't come in, so mm-hmm. it's cool. And it's actually, you know, much cooler inside than it is outside during those times. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that we can do if we think ahead that, you know, really hard times are going to come. And I'm one of those that think they are coming. You know, we're going to have to think in terms of sustainability in a large sense. For survival, it has a lot of other benefits to me. I mean, I think local sustainability and building a local community strong is what helps you to wean yourself off of the corporate grid, and it empowers people to take their lives back and say, okay, you know, we, you know, the corporate world to sustain us, because I don't think it's all that reliable or trustworthy anymore. I don't think they really need us all that much, you know.
And they don't seem to be doing all that much for no. other people other than themselves. I know Rob Hopkins, who wrote the Transition Handbook, who is a permaculture expert, you know, his philosophy is, and I'm going to have to paraphrase this, but, you know, he says that if we wait for the government or the controlling entities to do this for us, it's just not going to happen. And one person can't do it themselves, but just as a group, maybe we can save ourselves if we just get started doing these things.
Mm-hmm. There's a... It's kind of a cultural issue, really. In terms of that, taking initiative and like stepping forward and doing things, as opposed to having somebody tell you what to do and when to do it and why it's good, and just blindly following it, for sure. And there's even it's the corporate mentality is sort of pretty self-serving, but there's some pretty good corporations out there that have taken this concept and incorporated it into what they do. There's a new emerging sort of model for corporation is called a B Corp, which is sort of a triple bottom line: the profit and the welfare of their employees, as well as the welfare of the environment and their communities they're in, which is really important, because if you're someplace that gets flooded because of global warming, then your business is out of business. No matter how much money you could have made, it doesn't matter anymore because you don't have your manufacturing facilities. You don't have the resources to do whatever it is that you're doing.
You know, I don't have any real beef with local corporations, local community-based corporations, because I think they're sanctioned by the community. You know, they've got to play a role. They live in that community. They interact with the people in the community. But when you have a corporate entity that's removed, that is not associated with the community, then it needs another kind of approach in order to sanction it, in order to control it, to regulate it, so that it does act on behalf of people. And I know many states, I think it's up to about 20 now, have what's called beneficial corporations, which is, it's kind of the state-sanctioned version of the B Corporation. The B Corp actually, and I have interviewed a gentleman from B Corp who, as to whether they're actually living up to standards so that they can continue to be called a B Corporation. And then the beneficial corporation is one where the state actually made it possible to enlist the corporation as a beneficial corporation as an alternative to the straight corporation. The straight corporation, there is that myth that, I don't know if it's really a myth, I mean, you hear arguments on both sides of this, that the straight corporation has to serve its stockholders, and their stockholders' main interest is profits, therefore they have to always work for profits. It doesn't mean that they can only work for profits. I think they have to represent the interests of their stockholders. So the beneficial corporation, I think, does in some way alleviate some of the pressure on the corporation to seek, you know, profit only in its motive, and treat its employees better and to treat the environment better as part of its modus operandi. And I really think all corporations that are not small community-based should, in order to receive their charter or to continue to have a charter as a corporation, should be able to show that they are beneficial to the community. You know, if they're not, what good are they? Do we want to just charter corporations just so that they can make money and put it in their pockets regardless of where they live, who they serve, or whose interest it is? Why do we, you know, as a state, want to charter them? So that's my speech on that anyway. But getting back to sustainability in mind that you wanted to bring in and convey.
Well, certainly I would mention sustainableshepherdstown.org as a website. And if anyone would like to receive our emails, that would be a good starting point to put your email address into that website. Also, we are always looking for people to join us and be part of our work groups. At this point, we're loosely structured and we're planning another more general meeting, but you can get in touch with myself or anyone else who's represented on the website. If you're interested in energy, local food, we have a community garden. There's still some plots in the community garden available. We have an education group. We want to have a transportation group. I know I'm forgetting some groups.
I can actually speak to the transportation group.
Okay.
One of the things, there's a couple things going on with the transportation group, actually. There's a bike path that's going in out to Morgan's Grove, which the county and township are partnering on. They got grant money for that, I believe, from the federal government. I'm not exactly sure where that is in the planning stages, kind of early at this point. And we're also working with the Eastern Panhandle Transit Authority to get bus service in town. There's an idea for a loop sort of to Food Lion, Shepherd Grade Road, and potentially connecting with one of their other lines that runs maybe Harpers Ferry, Charlestown, or Martinsburg, somewhere around there. And that requires some community action, actually. We need people to approach town council and mayor's office and just kind of push to put make that a priority on their agendas.
Do you all meet, do you go to city council meetings? Do you promote your agenda, so to speak, with the city council?
We have one member of the group, Than Hit, who's kind of been assigned to that or is somehow connected to one of the town committees. We can, you know, talk about that and have more people.
A couple of biggies that I'm interested in. Food and water. Okay, we can talk about sustainability. Food, to me, the critical thing there, well, the permaculture, obviously, what we can do with our own gardens, promoting people to grow their own stuff, I mean, and acquiring the skills, teaching the kids in school so that they understand where food actually comes from, and also protecting our local farmers who are like a backbone of the community so that they don't disappear. You know, they don't dry up and blow away because they can't make a living. So I would encourage everyone to support to the max your local farmers.
I would agree. I mean, basically, we are in a good situation in that we have a lot of local food available, yet we still would need, I mean, if something were to happen and we were dependent on local food, we would still need almost twice as much local food as we're producing right now. So we still...
And we would be hurt if we lost a farmer. I mean, if you lose a farmer in this community, that's an impact. So, you know, it's very important. And I know the farming business is a tough business. My daughter is an organic farmer, and she actually farmed out of my property, ran a CSA, for a couple of years. So I got associated with all that and even tried my hand a little bit bringing stuff to a farmer's market. And I found out how much work it is, how much knowledge you have to have, and how demanding it is on the individual. So it is something we really need to respect our farmers. And the prices are really are not too high. they're not making a bundle, I guarantee you.
No, and our government is subsidizing the big farms. And, I mean, if you really factored in for those farmers what things really cost, you know, I supposedly I've heard that the farmer's market would then be competitive because they're not getting those subsidies.
Right. Yeah. Also, I think the quality of the food is so much better, too. Now, water, that's another one. Now, do you all get into water at all? Do you, have you addressed that issue at all? Is there, I mean, what I think about is, okay, testing. How clean is our water? What do we know about, you know, what's in it? What do we know about protecting it?
Well, that's,
know, that kind of stuff.
That's a huge problem and a huge issue. I know I think for myself, and I'm dependent on either well water, which, you know, as rivers run underground, can get polluted by runoff from farms and also by, dare I say that fracking word, but, you know, I mean, it we're not at this minute, but water travels underground, and I am deeply concerned about that. And then the other source of water, which would come from the sky, there's acid rain, there's pollution, and that water is coming down. And so here I am trying to do this, and I'm not an island. I'm totally affected by the other sources, by what other human beings do. So I'm deeply concerned.
That's one of those areas where when you talk about local sustainability, you can't make an island out of your local community. You've got to look to the broader picture and say, you know, because now studies have shown that there's up to 200 chemicals in mother's milk.
We're talking about a really what I see as a situation where we, the public, are not being served by our representatives who are well, they're being paid off by other sources, and, you know, I don't know what they think they're going to eat, and I don't know what they think they're going to drink.
Yeah. Well, the war's being fought.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be a man. You want to be a woman. Mm-hmm. You want to stand up and do something, be counted. This is the place for it because, you know, people fight these battles, and they wind up paying a price for it. We got to honor those people, too.
You see people who, like, in coal country, that it's like you are so small and we are so big and we're just going to ruin your land and you're just going to have to get up and move. I mean, this, you know, it's happening. It's been happening. And it's the same all over the country with fracking. So I don't know where this is going to end or where, you know, where our representation is in this.
I think I get the sense that we're starting to see a sort of a change in the tide, in all honesty, not to be overly optimistic, but it's starting to affect more and more people, whereas before it was kind of easy to be willfully ignorant about it because it didn't directly impact you. It's starting to the point where it is directly impacting people.
And shame.
Yeah, well,
it has to go to that.
It is, and as horrible as the water crisis that happened earlier this year in Charleston was, mm-hmm. it was kind of a blessing in disguise because the people who make decisions realized what their impact of the decisions then turned around and affected them, and they had to take action on that, and it's a really important thing. Water is tied to everything that we do. We are, what, 80% water? As just human beings, we need more water than we need food. You can go longer without food than you can without water. And it's energy. Most of our energy sources are just huge wastes of water. Food is really important. What the kind of water that goes in your food is really important. It's everywhere. It's all of it.
So that's an area. I'm sorry. I just stepped on Ellen's cord there. Sorry, Ellen.
It's okay. Stop it.
But yeah, it does interest me to know what are we testing for, what are we finding, what do we know about it. Those sort of things, they're kind of out of sight, out of mind. People don't. I don't think they think about it all that much. But when I see somebody spraying, you know, weed killer by the roadside, I go, oh, my God, no, I don't want that. I've got water, you know, I got a well here that I'm drawing out of.
I get so...
That's where it's going to go.
So angry seeing all of those chemicals, seeing people doing that. I've been very... It's on my to-do list to test my own water for this, and I did find online a chart or map that shows where the atrazine from agriculture is location by location, and frankly, geographically, where I'm located didn't look all that good from years and years of atrazine growing.
Was that produce. Used for apples? What was the atrazine used for?
Atrazine, yeah. I'm not sure exactly what it was used for, but somehow I stumbled upon this, mm-hmm. and you know it's in all our well water,
and it is expensive to do individual testing. I've looked into it myself a little bit, and okay, I'm going to test for five things. That'll be, you know, $150, please.
Yep.
And now there's a list here of about, you know, 50 test for. So it's the kind of thing a community has to do together, mm-hmm. as a group, testing our streams, testing randomly the water coming out of the spigots, and the water that we're accessing, you know, to get into our system. So, you know, we got so much to work on and so little time, it seems, sometimes. I appreciate the work that you all are doing. How many people are ostensibly in your organization, and how many people are that you would put down as quite active?
Oh, gee. I don't really have an answer to that. I know we've got a couple hundred people on our email list. You know, there's always that 20% that is the most active. One of the things, we're really in the process of restructuring and trying to get more active work groups and get people more involved with Sustainable Shepherdstown, mm-hmm. and having ways to make it easier for people to get involved with it.
If anyone has a question, feel free to call in 304-876-5369. And maybe you'd like to start to be active with Sustainable Shepherd or Shepherdstown, or, you know, come to some meetings and kind of get your juices going so you can go home and plant a couple of apple trees and do some things, put some insulation in, get that blanket on the hot water heater, and do some of those other good things. I'm really pleased to have you guys come in, and I hope you'll come by from time to time so that we can keep abreast of this and kind of keep it moving and kind of make it a living thing for the community.
Thank you so much for having us.
Well, my pleasure.
Absolutely. It's really important for people to just know that it's there, you know? It's kind of hard. That's a big part of it is awareness, making people aware that it's something they can do, even if it's they don't, you know, have to, like, take on the role of planning meetings and all that sort of stuff. They can just show up. That's a really important thing, is just being present.
Right. Where do you usually have your meetings?
At various locations, okay. Different people's houses. I think we're getting, well, we do like to do potlucks, so, mm-hmm. you know, that works at someone's house, but we're almost getting to the size where maybe we do need a more public space. Mm-hmm. To be holding these.
Like the men's club or something?
Yeah, I think that would be good.
Hmm. That would be interesting, like just from time to time to have an open type of thing and present, you know, what y'all are doing and to collect ideas from the community. That would be pretty neat.
We've done in the past a couple of things along those lines, and I really would like to see, you know, maybe every other month, something exactly the way you described, you know, sharing what we're doing and having something more social and a potluck, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think that would be great.
Now, I want you to work on my pet idea, okay? My pet idea is that we're going to go back about 100 years or so, and we're going to have horses and horse trails, horse buggies. We can take the C&O Canal, and you can start as a tourism thing and just go up and down the canal to Harper's Ferry and back, and then we'll become known for that. We can develop an infrastructure for buggy whips and buggies and making wheels and raising horses and teaching people how to ride horses and manage them and making wagons for and growing hay and all
okay,
that.
Okay, so that's
stuff.
An awesome idea.
This is Ralph.
Hey.
How are you?
Okay. A few minutes ago, in our landfills, which was disposable baby diapers.
Hmm.
Is that still...
I suppose it's not a good idea. and they're probably not something... I don't know. I haven't heard about this.
When you think...
It would that the liner is the part that's not compostable or not going to break down, that the human product and maybe the cotton probably... I mean, I'm not a scientist, but it seems to me that that would eventually break down.
You know, there's a movement, a composting movement called Humanure, which is mm-hmm. composting toilets, so the human waste in that is not really an issue. I think the issue would be just the sheer amount of plastic in the mm-hmm. disposable baby diapers breaking down, taking however long that takes.
You'd think in this day and age that we'd be able to come up with a, you know, plastics that would break down over a year or so or less, rather than, I don't know what, the hundreds of years that it takes to break down a plastic bag.
Humanure, that's a really... good topic and something that really can work. I also know it's not exactly legal in Jefferson County, and if you're planning on...
Oh, really?
Well, some laws would have to be changed if you're planning on doing that and you want to get a building permit.
Okay, but even, like, if you're rural, that's probably not an issue, right?
Well,
it's probably
I don't know.
Municipal setting.
I mean, I looked into it, and it was recommended that I build in Berkeley County.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Toilets.
Okay.
Matter of fact. Mm-hmm.
Well, it takes a little bit more of a conscious intention of your actions, and even in some cases, your diet can affect the viability of.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for calling in. Bye bye. All right. Well, we've burned up another perfectly good hour here. So, you guys were great, and it's a great. There's so much to it that. I don't think we're going to run out of things that we can do and should do to ward off what I see as potential disaster, but also to empower us as people in a community to work together. I got another call coming in. WSHC, you're on the air.
A lot of this stuff sounds really, really depressing and kind of doomsday scenario, but it really is about making your life better, really. I mean, when you pay attention to the food you eat and where it comes from, you end up with better food and sometimes even more money in your pocket because you're growing your own food and better water and a more comfortable living scenario if your house is built consciously and you know, aware of where it is and how it works with the seasons and that sort of stuff. It really is about making yours and everybody else's life better, as opposed to taking really negative, depressing worldview.
Right. Well, it seems, you know, worrying about it is kind of depressing, but doing something about it is very helpful.
Yes. Yes, so. I like the doing aspect. That's what really attracts me to transition and attracts me to sustainable Shepherdstown. Plus, a lot of it's just great fun, and I've met some wonderful people. Mm-hmm.
It is. It's fun. Fun is a really good way of looking at it, and it's enlightening in a constant lifelong learning sort of way.
Yeah, the people empowerment. I think loss of personal power over yourself and over your community. That's the disheartening thing. That's the thing that is despairing. But when you start to reclaim your personal empowerment, that you actually can do something about the problems. You know, I think that changes the whole outlook, and it makes life better. And like you say, yeah, have some fun at it. So thank you, and I've had fun talking to you guys, and hopefully I can get you to come back in, and we'll talk some more.
Anytime.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having the show.
Have a great day. Listening to WSHC Shepherdstown, the voice of Shepherd. And you've been listening to the Seven Generations Show with your host, Joe Gray. I'll be back here I'll be back on Wednesday with the Watchtower Show at 9 o'clock in the morning. That's a music show. But I will be back on a talk show next Saturday at 11 o'clock, and I hope you'll